You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, December 16th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, it's Casual Friday, but he's never casual. Of course, I'm talking about Cliff Schechter. And then later, doing our movie reviews today, Asif Manvi from The Daily Show. Though most of you probably know him from Beat Cops 12 years ago, a show that no one ever saw. But first, before we get to the horrible stories of the day, and some good stories, but mostly horrible, first, here is Cliff Schechter's theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Indeed, Libertas LLC. .com, Cliff Schechter at Cliff Schechter on Twitter. Right, Cliff?
That is right, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm back here in the city of my birth.
You are traipsing around New York City. We could have had you in studio.
I know. I didn't realize that till today, but I am here with the wife and kids. So
we could have brought them all in here. They could have all just stood right behind you. As we only have one chair in here,
that's the green room in your place.
That's right.
But the caviar is really good. We always
have caviar, usually just for breakfast when we bring in a chef to make omelets for the crew in the morning, and usually they have like some form of caviar to put into the omelet.
Hey, man, don't diss that studio.
No,
I loved it.
I'm not dissing it at all. So we had quite a way. First off, well, I mean, just to let people know, today is actually like sort of one of those weird news days. We had the Defense Authorization Act, which passed, and we will talk about that. That, of course, it's wonderful. It codifies, for the first time in law, the president's ability to essentially detain anybody as long as he decides to call them a terrorist in some fashion or another. We've got this. Ron Wyden has come out with a plan to save Paul Ryan from being known as the huge Medicare douchebag. And Bradley Manning hearing going on right now. That's getting pretty dramatic. It looks like we're not going to have a government shutdown. And then,
Sweet.
Of course, last night we had that clown car debate.
It's so much fun stuff going on. It's almost like, where do you start? But
let's start with the debate, because that's the lightest thing, and then we can move into the other areas.
Sure.
I was half in the bag last night. I'm not going to lie to people. I was incredibly drunk during most of that debate.
Excellent. What were you boozing up on?
Well, you know, it's like a Christmas party season, so I went to a couple of cocktail parties, and
I don't feel very comfortable at social gatherings, so I get drunk, you know, as quickly as possible so that I can...
That's true. You are pretty shy.
I'm shy. I'm shy.
I get... Very retiring, I would call you.
Yeah.
Reserved. I did hear something about you getting into Rick Perry's prescription list again.
And, yes.
And you got yourself all hammered on that stuff, huh?
Yes. I called Rick Perry's doctor, and he gave me a prescription. Make me just a little bit more fun. At the speaking engagements, but
they call it Michael Jackson minus.
Yes.
Was that a terrible? That was probably terrible of me.
No, okay. I don't really care about that. I enjoyed it. And so, you know, I was tweeting through the whole thing, but it was, I found it got a little boring. I mean, I really miss Herman Cain, who really,
I know.
Right.
I find that whenever there's not enough talking about yourself in the third person in presidential debates, they get really boring.
Rick Santorum, and, I think, referred to himself as Rick Santorum at one point.
He did. He stepped into that sort of void left by Herman Cain, but nobody is doing it, you know, sort of one after another the way Herm did, and I miss that.
Yeah, it definitely. Well, there was a couple of things that stood out for me. I don't know what stood out for you. I was sort of, you know, I had forgotten we have heard so little about this. In the past, like, 2 or 3 years, the intense animus that Republicans have for judges. I mean, you remember when, like, Cornyn, I think it was, got on the floor and said, like, I understand why people are shooting judges or something.
Yeah,
like that.
that's a great point. They went to town on that, and it's like, first of all, the joke of asking each of them their favorite Supreme Court justice as if we didn't know which four they were going to choose from. Because I would have loved if someone, it would have been awesome if anybody there had the courage to just be like, Ginsburg! just to see the crowd's reaction. But, so there's that. But yeah, I mean, just this, you know, call, I mean, at least, you know, give credit where credit's due. Ron Paul,
yep.
You know, and I don't remember who the other, there was a second one who also.
Maybe
was it Romney? It might have been Romney. Maybe I'll give Romney a little credit, as much as I hate to do so. He said, you know, hauling judges, justices in front of Congress to, you know, to subpoenaing them. I mean, again, like, this is McCarthy stuff. You know what
right.
I mean? These are the things that undermine democracy. There were three co-equal branches, last I checked, as much as these guys want the executive to be pretty much the only one.
As far as I can tell, I think Gingrich said specifically that they weren't co-equal. I may be mistaken, but I think I specifically remember, I think it was Gingrich, basically said, you know, the courts was not supposed to be a co-equal branch or something to that effect. Maybe I'm
right. Well, after all, he's a historian, so he knows that stuff.
No,
that's what actually when he was explaining to Freddie Mac when he was there.
Right.
All about that kind of stuff. I mean, I know, and obviously he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. So that's clear enough, but I mean, you know, what constitutionally, and just the fact that any of these people keep referring to the Constitution when they're in favor of torture and things like that is enough to make your, you know, make you want to scream, because none of them would know the Constitution if it smacked them. None of them would know the Constitution if it waterboarded them, put it that way. But, you know, they keep using that, and obviously Gingrich doesn't know his history, because not only were the courts set up as a co-equal branch, but after the famous case Marbury versus Madison, it was pretty well established that the court was going to judge the constitutionality of what the other branches were doing. And if the court doesn't have that function, then what is its function?
You know, I mean, parking tickets. You just got to be an arbitrator. You just got to be a fair arbiter of, were you here for longer than 60 minutes? Was the
that's a great point.
Was the was there a flashing red light on the meter? Yes or no?
Can you imagine the chaos? And all around the country, if we didn't have the courts to enforce those parking tickets, I agree.
That's all.
So I don't really understand what they're doing. I mean, again, all they're doing is what they always do.
Right.
Anybody who disagrees with them, on anything, they politicize it. So, you know, it's the courts or the media, liberal media, which of course is laughable also, and academia and everywhere else. There must got to be something wrong with anybody that doesn't see the world their crazy way. And so that includes justices, but you'll notice that when it comes to the conservative justices, it's totally different. Those guys are heroes. And so it's the usual hypocrisy, and that's why I will give credit to Ron Paul, who, you know, you know, seems like literally just the sanity coming from him, even though on some things I think he's ridiculous when you compare it just to the rest of that stage.
Right. This is a guy, this is a guy who signed on to many John Birch Society documents. One of the most established, probably, racist organizations in the country. And he's the voice of reason on that stage half the time. Or maybe three quarters of the time.
Amazing.
It is,
yeah,
it is,
I mean,
pretty
amazing. Seriously, most of the time. I mean, because the other guys that used to be moderate on some things, Romney, Gingrich, you know, whether it was on health care or climate change, the rest, of course, have now, you know, to quote Sarah Palin, they've refuted all that. So what do you have left?
So,
right? Go ahead.
No, we are literally only weeks away from the Iowa caucus. So what do you think? I mean, what do you think is going to happen at this point? You know, you and I have access to some of the most sort of well-educated in terms of political minds, you know, and I've had conversations with guys who I completely respect, you know, off air, not when they're writing, when they might be sort of more willing to sort of, you know, go out on a limb. And nobody seems to have a clue as to what's going to happen with this.
Yeah, I hate to say it. I have to join that group. And I like to make predictions and be wrong like anybody else. And I probably already have a number of times, because I remember I wrote a column when I kind of tried to tell Democrats that Rick Perry, when he first entered, was exactly the kind of guy we should be worried about. So that panned out pretty well.
Mm.
You know, but
that's when you lost your syndicated gig, right?
I totally should have. They're like, are you actually, exactly, they're like, are you as drunk as Perry? I mean, it's tough. Perry looked like a George W. Bush coming in. I still sort of believe that had George W. Bush been, had to have engaged in this many debates, which he didn't, nearly this many, because they didn't used to have a debate for like every site that existed. It was like, right. Hey, you know, the porn site wants to have a debate. You know, so I think, and I think that's what happened to Perry and them. But with that said, it's hard to tell. I mean, Ron Paul seems like he's surging in Iowa right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my thought would be if Gingrich holds on, he's in very good shape, because when they head towards the south, towards his area where all the dog whistle stuff plays extremely well and Mormonism doesn't play so well, I think that puts him in a great position. You know, but I think if Ron Paul wins Iowa, then everything gets so shaken up, who the hell knows what happens?
I think Ron Paul could win Iowa, come in second in Iowa, come in second or third in New Hampshire, but he's not going to do so well in South Carolina. He's not going to do so well in Florida. And the thing is that it's not winner take all in the Republican primaries. I think it's a split. The winner gets half, and then the other half is sort of divvied up based upon percentage of win. And then starting in April, I think it's winner take all. But the point being that it seems like there nobody can win. And, you know, which leads me to believe that we could be going into the spring and it's still unclear who's going to win.
Which is pretty awesome if you think about it. I mean, it means you get late entrance into the race and you get the party clamoring for somebody. My guess is if Ron Paul does well enough, can you imagine how much fun, if he wins Iowa, how much fun it's going to be to, like, read, like, Krauthammer's columns? I mean,
right.
The neocon wing of the Republican Party is literally going to lose their shit.
Right. That's when you'll start to see the neocon, you know, the sort of Likudniks in the Republican Party get freaked out, because, you know, they don't take Ron Paul seriously as a potential winner of the primary. And so they sort of they don't mind his talk about Israel and about the idea that we shouldn't be engaged in all these sort of pursuits of creating democracies at the end of a gun. That will be interesting to watch. But so let's transition.
I mean, what do they do? I mean, they either have to try to support Obama, who obviously has been much more neoconish than many of us, you and I, certainly would like. And it's not enough for those guys, because it's it's very difficult to be enough for those guys. But obviously, Ron Paul is well to the left of Obama, if you want to call it left or right. Let's just put it well more towards. I mean, he wants to pull out from our bases. And
well, he's an isolationist. He's an isolationist.
Right.
And
so what do they do? I mean, do they support Obama and try to push him to the right, or do they bring a third party candidate out? I don't know.
No. Ron Paul's not going to be. He's going to be essentially. I think. We're going to see the last of Ron Paul, I think, when they start to head down south.
I think you're right. I was just sort of enjoying for a second the possibility if Gingrich and Romney destroyed each other and somehow Ron Paul snuck through, based upon fundraising and those wins in the beginning. But yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, when I start looking at this now, nobody else seemed to have any credibility versus Romney before. I thought Perry would, and then he threw that all away. I mean, so now that you're looking at things the way they are, I mean, I actually could see Gingrich getting the nomination, which is just amazing to me.
Yeah, it seems possible. But let's turn to something that helped Romney quite a bit yesterday that didn't take place at the debate. And it helps him.
Stock market stuff?
No, I'm actually talking about that Wyden, Ron Wyden.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Oh, why? Did his stocks go up yesterday?
Oh, I figured maybe they went up a little bit, I mean, that's all Romney does, anyhow, right? He burns dollar bills, but
yeah,
okay.
Exactly. I mean, the Ron Wyden came out. It was a very strange thing, and from what everything I've been reading, it's simply just like the ultimate sort of epitome of a senator taking out his personal grudges on all of us in some weird way. But Ron Wyden came out. Do you know this story?
No, so I really am now intrigued.
Well, Ron Wyden came out and said that he would meet with Paul Ryan and that they basically came up with a plan together. Now, remember, Paul Ryan had a plan to destroy Medicare and call it Medicare, on the other end of it. Ron Wyden has come out with basically a plan to change Medicare so that you can basically take – your Medicare payments and put it towards private insurance and allow the private insurance to compete with Medicare. Now, in the end, I think, it would take some time and it would depend on who the administration is, who would executing it. But if this rule was ever to take place in 2022, whenever he projects it would take place, I think people would find like, oh, Medicare is really much better. And nobody... it hasn't been scored yet by the CBO, but people are anticipating that we'll save no money. It in fact probably cost money because all you're doing is diluting the pool. But what the real effect that it has is it basically inoculates Romney, because it sounds very much like a Romney healthcare plan. It inoculates the Republicans from their attacks on Medicare, because now Paul Ryan has now made a new plan with a guy perceived to be one of the more liberal Democrats in the Senate.
That's amazing. And what are the grudges? Are there things that we know about?
Apparently,
what is Ron Wyden doing?
He had a portion of the American Care Act that he was heavily invested in. He had a specific proposal that essentially got annihilated by Obama in the process. And so there's a strong feeling that he is just responding to this. And Wyden's, I guess it was called the Free Choice Act. And he was very pissed that it wasn't part of the Affordable Care Act. And this is like one of those petulant, sort of like, this is what senators do. I mean, this is the thing that, I think we've talked about this in the past. It always has sort of just amazed me. You've got guys like Lieberman and, who make a decision as to whether or not everybody's going to be a Medicare buy-in just based upon, they're just pissed. They just want to be.
It's interesting because, I mean, and this happens all the time. When I started looking in and researching the book, I wrote on McCain. I guess I was asking, how can this guy go from being the conservative he was in the 80s to the moderate darling he was sort of late 90s, early 2000s, to going back to the right and a new form of right. He's sort of more of a Ron Paul, isolationist righty initially because of his experience in Vietnam, and he came out on the other end a neocon nut. And so really there were three different versions of him. And I thought, you know, what's the deal? And the more I looked into stuff, like, you know, not everything, some of the things, some of the reasons he changed were due to political circumstances, you know, certainly, and the fact that, you know, that he might here and there come to change an opinion on something for a valid reason. But really most of it was, as I like to put to people, generally legislated by hate. It was basically whoever he was angriest at the moment, whoever was pissing him off, you know. And for a while in the early 2000s, everybody's like, look at him. He wants to be part of a patient's bill of rights. He's joining that with Ted Kennedy. And look, he's talking about cafe standards. And, you know, he's against Bush's tax cut. And really most of that was because he was pissed at Bush.
He went and approached Kerry to be his VP candidate. And personal sort of just personal hatred of Bush.
Animus, that's it. And that's when he went and he approached Kerry. That is the moment that he scared the living hell out of Karl Rove. And that's when everything changed. And that's when Rove and the Republican Party basically went to him and said, we'll get you the Republican nomination in 2008 if you want it. But you need to come back to our side. And you need to, you can't do this now. And you need to start being, you know, stop being the thorn in Bush's side. And he traded in for that. But most of it, so he let his personal ambition at that point overcome it. But most of most of what he was doing when he was legislating, and you've seen that with Obama, you know. I mean, Newt Gingrich is the epitome of that. I mean,
right.
People still claim that the reason that he had to get off Air Force One at the back, they made him exit through the back of the airplane. And he was angry, you know, he didn't get prime seating with the president, get to walk out with President Clinton. That's why he shut down the government.
Right.
He's mad at Clinton. I mean, this is like to think that this kind of stuff happens all the time based on this stuff, but it does.
It's funny because in one way it should be obvious that it does, right? I mean, you know, when we think of like people like, leaders like that we, you know, that were perfectly sort of typical of their time, you know, the Napoleons and the, you know, just going back in history, whoever it was, they made their determinations very much about, you know, sort of like a small combination of these are the certain resources we need, but also I hate that Duke. And we're going to take my army and go over there and kill all their, you know, women and children. I'm going to kill thousands of people because of it.
That's pretty much, and sadly, we still do that.
And sadly,
because
we still
do
that.
You may remember Saddam Hussein. Why? Well, he tried to kill my father.
Right.
Not saying that's the only reason we went there. Certainly there are a number of other ones, but that provided a prime motivation for George W. Bush to go there. So, yeah, apparently we are still dealing with that. It still gets lots of people killed, and it still ruins lots of lives. And, you know, Wyden has always seemed, the thing that's interesting to me is he's always seemed to be a very good progressive senator. And people would have to help me, but the one other time, and this may be the thing you're talking about, that I remembered him breaking away in sort of in a not understandable way and had many people scratching their heads was during the debate over the Affordable Care Act, where he seemed to be joining with Republicans on things that were not good.
He was pissed about the how the Obama apparently, in his words, vaporized the Free Choice Act. I've seen that reported by Brian Beutler.
Right. And I don't know what exactly I don't remember exactly what the Free Choice Act was, but I'm saying I remember at the time when that was being debated, all that in 2009, he was taking some positions that were at odds with what you would expect from a progressive Democrat. I remember sort of at the time looking at him and saying, what's he doing? And so maybe he's just, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's just one of these guys that's progressive on most things, but for whatever reason, he's terrible on health care.
Well, but
I don't know the answer.
It's also not just a question of he has different opinions on health care. It's also the timing of all this is really bad from a political standpoint. But we just got a couple minutes here, and I want to touch on, in terms of like a political standpoint and things that are bad, this National Defense Act. And the military detention that's embedded within it, the National Defense Authorization Bill. You know, the only sort of happy thing I can say about it is that in the end, Franken voted against it. Durbin voted against it. Sanders voted against it. Wyden, Cardin, and Franken.
Rand Paul?
Yeah, Paul voted against it. Lee, Mike Lee, I think his name is, and Crapo, and yep. Harkin and Merkley, and I think DeMint. So the sort of the
didn't Kirk also to give credit to where it's due. Mark Kirk, I think, voted against it too.
I think so. I'm not sure, but it was 86.
He was talking about how it was unconstitutional.
So. 86 to 13. So on one hand. And Glenn Greenwald's got a great piece, and I'll talk about it later in the show about some of the myths. But, you know, everything that we think is bad about it is the case. It codifies essentially the capacity for the U.S. military to, with the permission of the president, to detain anybody indefinitely, and just about anybody. You know, of course, there has to be a determination that they're a terrorist or have helped terrorists.
Who makes that determination?
The same people who indefinitely lock them up. So.
And I mean, you know, is there any debate that goes on for them to make that determination?
Maybe
to make it just within one organization. Can one person decide you're a terrorist? Because you know,
the president.
You know, I mean, I write a column. One of the places it goes up is Al Jazeera English. I don't know. I mean, maybe they send me wire transfers because they pay me for my column. So I guess, in a way, for some people who view them as a terrorist organization on the far right, you know, for all I know, I'll be in Gitmo for the rest of my life.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, I'm just saying it's amazing.
I want to make it absolutely clear to anybody who's eavesdropping on this call or listening to the show. you and I, you know, I tolerate these types of things you say, but I'm in no way affiliated with you or supportive of you.
I'd like you all, exactly. When you're dragging me and my entire family away, Sam Cedar had nothing to do with this.
Now,
I just want to watch you all. I mean, listen to the name Sam Cedar. I mean, you know, he couldn't be a Muslim terrorist if he tried.
There's two things I want you to address here, okay? Because you're pretty savvy about this. Now, the president first said he wanted a veto. Now, people have to remember, this is a big bill. This military detention, the authorization of military force, the extension of this, and the broadening of the authorization for military force that originally was just about the people involved in 9/11 and now is about all these sort of ancillary groups that could be somehow
right.
associated.
If you once had a conversation because you ran into one of them in the airport, you're now included.
Right, or if you are like the type of people who essentially attacked us at that time. So
similar haircut, maybe you have the same choice. You know, maybe you like the cheesy poofs and not the cheese doodles. Whatever it is, there's enough similarities there.
And so –
and you're in trouble.
And so – but there were other aspects of this bill that I think he wanted change, and he got those changed. They weren't the ones that we thought he wanted changed. In other words, this is a big bill. There were provisions in there that he wanted not tied in, I think. And we all assumed that what he wanted was that thing about the military detention not to be there. But really what he wanted was more flexibility as president.
Right. He wanted the executive to have the ability to make a decision more than Congress, if I'm correct.
Yes. So. And or more than just the military being mandated.
Challenge anybody to do is to tell me how that theory to want it, to the executive to make that more than Congress, when really, of course, nobody should be making that decision. But how that's any different than Dick Cheney? I honestly would challenge people on the left who are Obama supporters to do that, because again, and overall, I will likely vote for Obama. But if you don't find this abhorrent, I don't know.
The difference, I'll tell you what the difference is.
I think I'll hold back, Sam.
I'll tell you what the difference is. And in fact, people can go back and listen to my talk with Charlie Savage. I think we did this about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Maybe it was 2 months ago. On the difference, Charlie Savage wrote an essay that's on Amazon. It's one of those like sort of mini books. And he wrote an essay about the difference between Bush and Obama in their approach to these matters. Bush, and this is what the difference is, the Bush administration asserted that the president had the right to do this, implicit in the presidential powers and as granted, as extended through the authorization for military force. The Obama administration believes that these things should be statutorily, it should be more explicitly drawn out by the Congress. And that's what we've just seen. They don't have a problem with the encroachment on civil liberties. And this is what Charlie Savage's essay was all about. People should go back and listen to this now because this is exactly this is exactly that point. That the Bush administration thought the power already was there, that there was a unilateral executive that can make this power. The Obama administration feels that it needs congressional approval to have that power. And now they have it. And it's not, you know, the issue of the infringement upon our civil liberties is never addressed.
I mean, the whole thing is amazing to me because, again, you know, it's a shame that, that now Newt Gingrich has destroyed the term Hyperion, because that stuff actually does matter. It matters. If you really want to try to figure out what the founders were thinking, you can't just look at it in writing. And sometimes I think people, lawyers, don't get it. You need to understand the history and the context within which our government was founded and what the belief system was. And if you know that, you know that the original articles of the Confederation did not even have an executive. It was, that's how scared they were of executive power. There was not even a standing army, and there was no want for that. That they wanted that not to happen because the worry was that we'd end up where we're ending up here. And so if you realize all that, to think that, that either Bush or Obama can believe that the people that founded this country ever wanted an executive to accrue that kind of power, they're either stupid or they're lying. Well, I mean, they've no knowledge of the history of this country, or they're basically frauds.
And
you know, and that's the nicest thing I can say about either group of them.
And the point that people there's two more points before because we're going to start to wrap this up in a second. But there's two more points. One is that, you know, for people who are freaking out now, saying it's just a matter of time before, you know, we are picked up. Look, this is going to be an issue for our kids. And maybe our grandkids. This is not going to be an issue for us, you know, because it's just going to be basically, you know, that random, you know, American citizen who now is making YouTubes, you know, and he's converted or he's a Muslim or he was, you know, he's got a funny sounding last name. It's going to be on the margins. But it really, I think, is going to be an issue that is going to be far more widespread. For our grandkids, this is the way it happens. You know, it happens
when people are no longer left who remember what it was like.
Right.
Like the classic thing. I mean, I know we got to go, but the classic thing I always like to point out: my grandfather, who lived to be a few months shy of 99, and was in great shape most of his life. He and you know was the American dream. Came here when he was 6 months old from East, you know, from the Ukraine, and started his own business and did well. And he would always warn, he was always wary of the markets, of the stock market, would always tell us, everybody, what it was like during the Depression. And people came to view him as just sort of like, oh, come on, you're so yesterday, that could never happen again. And that's why it took them till the late 90s and the periods of time it took them to be able to get rid of things like Glass-Steagall.
Right.
Because you really had to get to the point where most of the people that had lived through that and had suffered through that were either old enough they couldn't really, you know, they weren't in the shape to stop it or weren't around with us anymore.
It just wasn't.
And that's
where
these things
right,
become
it just
dangerous.
Wasn't a critical mass of people who
so, right.
Remembered
so it's not you and me.
Right.
Right. Because we know what it was like when people couldn't just be picked up who were American citizens, and frankly, we know what it was like when people couldn't just be picked up in general before that.
Right.
But you're right. It's our kids and our grandkids that are going to have to grapple with this. And the erosion of democracy, and what I was always taught and I always believed when I was growing up in school, which is that's what set us apart from other countries. That's what made a democracy unique, that somebody couldn't just come and bang your door down in the middle of the night and arrest you without due process, without a trial. And the fact that that can happen now, I mean, I'm not sure what to believe in.
And I want to
what we represent anymore.
I want to ask you one more final question, and we'll just talk about it very quickly. If President Obama had not said that he was now prepared not to veto this bill, when the final vote happened yesterday, when they got the conference bill back to the Senate, would it have been 86-13? In other words, I know there are people out there who want to defend Obama at every turn. And I'm not saying I'm going to go and vote for Mitt Romney now. And you made the same point. But they're going to say, hey, it doesn't matter if he vetoed it because it would be overridden. But you know the way the politics work. Had President Obama had come out before this bill came back from conference to the Senate and said, I'm going to veto this bill, would the vote have been 86-13?
course not. Hey, look, this is the same issue we've grappled with and dealt with Obama from the beginning. He refuses to use power when he can. See recess appointments. See, you know, and all those things, all the things he could have done. He refuses to use the bully pulpit, which is one of the most important things a president has.
Or he doesn't want to.
Right, that Teddy Roosevelt speech he just gave, I want you all to imagine, as I've been screaming about forever, had he given that speech in all the swing states, the homes of Olympia Snow and Arlen Specter and Ben Nelson, and in states where he either won and was more popular than they were, or at least in Nebraska where he even won an electoral vote, he'd gone out right after his presidency and done that and think about whether we could have gotten the stimulus that was twice as big, as opposed to him caving immediately and not trying. And that's what happens. When you send a signal that you're not going to fight, people aren't scared of you. And so, and again, for those same, very same Obama defenders, I give you the FDA and I give you the Plan B decision, because I'd like you to tell me how right-wingers in Congress made that happen. I mean, I'm going to vote for Obama in the end, but I ain't going to work for him and I ain't going to fight for him. I'll tell you that.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas, LLC. Cliff, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
See you later this weekend.
Take care, Sammy.
All right, bye-bye. Folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Asif Manvi. He'll give us some movie suggestions.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that part. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician. Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Right. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Well, it's not Asif, is it?
No, sorry, Sam. It's me. It's Matthew.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to Asif.
I'm not, sorry to let everybody down.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a letdown, I got to tell you. I was very excited.
I was looking forward to it, too.
I was calling Asif, and he, I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened.
I wouldn't take it personally. I'm sure he's a big fan.
I don't take it personally. He's, you know, we're friendly. We don't hang out, but, you know, I ran into him on the street a couple months ago, and we were talking, and then I was thought, oh, you know, this Lowe's thing, and then I see him do a report on it. And
right.
I thought, we need a film guy, and, you know, he's a great actor, and so I thought it would be funny. He's also extremely funny. You know,
yeah,
you've seen
yeah.
him in Beat Cops, right?
Sure have, sure. He was
played two different roles.
Crazy.
Not just the doorman, he was also the janitor. He played two different roles.
Oh, that's right, that's right. I forgot how multifaceted his performance was.
Yeah, and now we're stuck with you.
Hey, well, I'm happy to help in any way I can, Sam.
I guess it's better than Chris Rosen.
I like to think so. I mean, I take this seriously. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's.
I haven't heard from you know. The best thing is like the funniest thing is that Rosen's never been like, "Hey, what's going on? How come?" Never got an email. Never got a tweet. Never got a IM from him. Hey,
yeah.
What happened? He just. You know, this is a little. This is a little hint to people. Now, Matthew, I got to tell you, you are extremely. Matthew's very earnest about this. Like when I called you, Matt just looked at me and he's like, Matt in here in the office, he's like, what, was he sitting there waiting by the phone to give movie reviews? And I'm like, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I thought I was helping you out, and I guess it came through. So.
And you don't just do that on Fridays. You do that every day, don't you?
I know. Why didn't you call yesterday?
Well, because we don't even do movie reviews on Friday. I mean, on Thursday.
Oh.
But you probably just sit by the phone thinking, if he ever wants to, I'll be here. And that is a good lesson for people. That is why you are a multimillionaire, is because you pulled yourself by your own bootstraps and you wait by the phone for people to ask for movie reviews.
Exactly right.
I've seen your apartment. You're not a multimillionaire.
I have several thousand dollars.
Well, there you go. Now,
I personally apologize to Matt for letting him down. I know he's particularly disappointed in having to listen to me be earnest here today, but I'm a big fan of him, so.
Oh, see that?
Respect my family.
Yeah, Matt's excited because usually everybody who's ever done film, any of the film stuff, usually Matt gets into a fight with them.
I know. Well, I'm going to break that trend right now because Matt, I like your work.
Thank you. Us Matts have to stick together.
Wow, this
That's right.
This is really touching stuff, guys. I think I'm going to be nauseous.
I like to, you know, Matt, I like to think of myself as a straight
as my
edge
wife,
film
as my
reviewer.
Daughter says.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys are both straight edge.
Yeah.
Although, wait,
me,
Matthew,
so,
I know
not so much
you're not, Matthew, you're not so straight edge.
No, but when it comes to films, I mean, it's none of this junk, none of this, you know, get high off of a movie kind of stuff. You know, I want to see what's real going on in the world.
You're serious.
You get it?
Yeah, no, I get
well,
it. Believe me, I get it. Now, listen, I have a confession to make. I did not watch the movies that you recommended last week. I have them in my hand: Gabby on the Roof, Tokyo-o, and Cave of the Forgotten Dreams. I'm gonna watch with Myla, but last weekend both her grandfathers were in town, and so and you know then that. That ruins everything for me, which is not to say that if by any chance my father-in-law or my father is listening to this program, which I know they don't, that I have a problem with them.
Sure, no, of course not.
I also don't want to imply that I don't have a problem with them. But I'm simply
leave
saying
that
in the context in which I just said, it was problematic for me. I couldn't get to the movies. I'm not
it's ironic
any way weighing into the emotional issues that I have with my father or my father-in-law.
Right. No, I understand that completely. It's actually ironic because Tokyo Story is actually about unwanted in-laws coming to town. So, you know, you sort of had your own Tokyo Story happen.
That's no, I didn't say that. That's,
right.
That's exactly
I'm
what
sorry,
I did
I
not say.
No,
I
didn't
like
hear
it
that.
When my in-laws come to town.
Right. My
I'm
mistake.
Less
I'm sorry.
Resolved about when my own parents come to town.
I see.
But I'm not going to let's not make it about that.
Yeah, well, you'll get to that one. I got two new ones for you this week, though, that I think might even jump the queue for you.
Ooh, well, hello. Jumping the queue.
Yeah, I learned that word from Netflix, you know.
No,
line.
It's also, for people who don't know, if you go to Britain, they'll say, hey, why don't you get into the queue?
I know they love Netflix over there.
Is there? And if you need, if instead of there being a line to get to the bathroom, they'll say you've got to wait in queue for the loo.
Yes. Oh, very good. Very good. That's true. Yeah. Okay. So listen. Speaking of England, this is a British film that I want to recommend for you.
A British film. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw
subtitles?
It. I can't remember if I heard you. No. It actually, although it should have, actually, believe it or not, the accents are rather thick. But I trust in your ear to be able to hear through it. The movie is called Four Lions, and it's by Chris Morris, who I'm not sure if you're familiar with his
Chris
TV
Morris.
Comedy work.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Blue Jam, Jam, The Day Today, Brass Eye, all classic satire.
The Brass Eye is unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing,
what?
Amazing stuff.
What
so he made a movie. It's called Four Lions. Now, don't get upset, but it's a terrorist comedy.
You got to be shitting me.
No.
How could you do that to me?
Well,
you know,
because
Matthew
I know what you like.
The editing on A Bad Situationist, which was turned out to be, well, it was originally a terrorist comedy, not so funny in the fall of 2001. I can tell you that.
Yeah. And it seems like the taboo maybe wore off, although this definitely got a lot of sort of criticism, but It's deliberately about Muslims who are sort of fumbling and bumbling. It's like the Three Stooges do jihad in England. So it's like a slapstick comedy about four Muslims in England who try to get into Al-Qaeda, who try to plan a terrorist sort of event. And it's hilarious. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's stupid, but it's also got a real political edge to it. The tone is really weird, kind of like the Brass Eye and Jam. And one of the guys kind of looks like John Benjamin, actually, so I don't know if that'll help or hurt you.
It cuts both ways, too.
Yeah.
I'm actually,
but it was,
speaking of Benjamin, as an aside, I may be getting a flat-screen TV because he apparently is, his career is going great, incidentally, for everybody. And apparently he's upgrading his flat-screen TV, and I'm going over to his apartment. I don't know if people know this about me, but I'm extremely handy. And so when people need something built or deconstructed, I get a call. So I'm going to be taking out their built-in shelf and reinstalling it higher, and I'm going to get his, like, 32-inch flat-screen TV.
Well, finally, I can't believe you waited this long to get a big-screen TV, Sam. A guy like you, you deserve one.
I got news for you. I haven't bought a TV in probably 15 years. The last TV I got, I won it at a raffle at Air America.
That's one of the
big Sonys they were trying to get rid of because there's no room for it. And
Is one at a raffle in quotes, Sam? Was one and raffle in quotes in that one?
No, I know what you're implying. Did I steal that? No.
Right.
There are other things that accidentally, when I departed Air America, ended up being in my knapsack that I had no idea.
I think I may have been a lookout at one point.
Fubar. Not Fubar, obviously I own that, but
I don't think.
Oh, I know what it is.
What is
that instant replay? That accidentally. I know it looks like a big instrument to fit in. No, that actually was still in my office from. I'm not going to get into it. Let's not even talk. Let's not even go there.
Right. Okay,
the point
never mind. Sorry,
I won that raffle shortly after I was fired. On my day, on the weekday job. And I'll tell you something, I've never felt so good in my life coming back in there triumphantly when people thought I was down and out and wheeling that massive Sony. The screen's not so big, but the TV itself is huge. But it was so big.
It was heavy.
And I was just, it was, you know, I felt so good about wheeling that thing out of there. And, I went to a – this is another aside, seeing as how it's Name Drop Friday. Oh, did I – Matt, I got so many things to tell you, Matt, that you appreciate. Last night I went to a BBC America because I've done some work for them in the past, a Christmas party. And I don't feel comfortable at Christmas parties a lot, but fortunately there's a lot of people there and there was food. I ran into a couple of people I know just business wise. I met Mark Green's son-in-law. I had an extended conversation with Mark Green's son-in-law, which.
Oh, my God. He must not like him either.
Huh?
He must not like him either.
I'm not going to characterize his. He said he loves his father-in-law.
Okay. Just how we spoke about earlier.
Right, but I mean, right, exactly. But it was very interesting. But go ahead. I don't even know why I. Oh.
No, well, we're four sides away from my original.
We were talking about the Brass Eye.
Well, yeah,
Brass
Eye. It's Four Lions. Four Lions. That's the movie. Yeah,
one thing about the Brass Eye. Am I not mistaken? Is oh. Okay. Goodbye, Matthew. That's
okay. Bye. Have fun.
Bye. Asif.
Hey, Sam.
Hey, we're on live right now.
We are okay.
There we go. So,
can you hear me?
Yeah, you know, I was talking to another buddy of mine giving me another film review, but I don't particularly like him. But he gave a good film review. Have you ever seen Four Lions?
Oh, yeah.
It's good?
Yeah. I liked it. It's a movie that I think it didn't get a lot of attention in this country, but it won a lot of awards in the UK. I think it's a satire about terrorism. So
right.
Americans love it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, Asif is joining us to, there was actually two things. I mean, I wanted to get some film reviews from you.
Okay.
Because you're a well-respected actor and now and comedian and I guess correspondent on the Daily Show. And then I also wanted to ask you about the Lowe's thing and also about asking Rick Scott to pee in a cup.
All right, let's do it.
I loved it. All right, let's hear your first film review.
My first film review is a total plug for my own movie.
For what? For one of your movies?
Yeah, so I made a movie called Today's Special.
Today's Special.
Which came out in the Thanksgiving of 2010. It's a wonderful, if you like Indian food, and if you like a romantic comedy, it's a total like Indian food rom-com set in an Indian restaurant. It's heartwarming, it's funny, it's stars myself, the great Madhav Jaffrey, the star of Indian cuisine in the West. If anybody, all the foodies out there will know who she is. She's written 100+ Indian cookbooks.
Wait, what's her name?
And her name is Madhav Jaffrey.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit. Madhav Jaffrey? What is it?
Madhav Jaffrey, yeah.
Oh, okay.
She is like, if you Google her, she's like written, she's won 7 James Beard Awards, and she's like a cooking impresario.
Okay.
And so she's in the movie, myself, a legendary Bollywood actor, Nasiruddin Shah, who was in The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen with Sean Connery. We've got people like Dean Winters, who you guys all know from 30 Rock, and now the those commercials where he plays, he's crashing into trees and things all the time. And then... a wonderful actress named Jess Weixler, who was in a movie called Peace. It's a great little movie. It's a really fun, heartwarming family comedy set in an Indian restaurant. And it comes out on DVD January 24th.
Is it streaming on Netflix? Will it be streaming on Netflix?
It's not streaming, but it is coming out on video on demand. And on Amazon and on Netflix, you can rent the DVD.
Okay.
Starting January 24th.
All
so
right.
If you didn't catch it in the theaters, it's playing there.
Well, I will probably watch it on Amazon because I'm not, that's my whole thing now. Is that because my wife and my child, I'm not allowed to leave the house to go see a movie. And
right.
I mean, who wants to spend $100 to go see a movie because you got to get a babysitter? And then, it's a pain in the ass.
That's what happens when you have kids. Then
yeah.
You have to the whole going out to a movie becomes. This is why I feel like this is the our movie did reasonably well in the theaters, but it was very difficult to get people out because people just aren't going to see movies the way they used to, because exactly for the reasons you're saying, it's expensive. You got to find parking. You got to like get a babysitter. You got to, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's a whole production, and it ends up costing you as much as it does to go see a Broadway play. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Except for if you go see a Broadway play now, it's as if it's almost costs you as much as it would be to make your own movie.
Right. There you go.
You gotta, because you get all the same expenses, but then on top of that, the ticket costs like $100 or whatever it is. So it's like,
right,
it's like,
right, right.
I think to go out now, I mean, if my wife go out and we have just like a moderate price dinner for New York and go see a movie, I think it costs something like $7,000.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that's only if you go like down to the East Village.
That's right. A moderately, you know? That's like one drink each.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
My wife and I cannot do that. We don't do the one drink each. If we're going to drink, we
right,
drink.
Right,
that's
right.
A separate
so,
issue.
Yeah.
So today's
so
special.
It's hard. It's hard. Today's
what's your favorite?
Special,
what's your favorite Indian
of,
restaurant in New York City?
It's a restaurant called Dawat. Dawat.
Is that
on
the
Upper East?
No.
It's on the Upper East Side. It's like 53rd. I'm going to get you the address. Hold on. I'm going to go on the internet.
Dawat.
And it's called, yeah, Dawat. And it's North Indian cuisine. It's wonderful. 10 East. Wait, hold on. Where is that?
There's nothing up by where we live, though, right?
Where are you?
I live around the corner from you. Remember we ran into each other up there?
Oh, right. You're up on the Upper West Side, then.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is 210 East 56th Street. And it is it's terrific.
Too far away. Too far away. That's right. That's where you got
away.
A kid. You got a kid. Forget about it.
Jesus. All right. So then on the Upper West Side, there's Sapphire. You ever gone to Sapphire?
No.
Sapphire is over by Columbus Circle, by the Time Warner building. You can walk there.
Yeah, not with a kid.
So that's.
I got to put her on the scooter. Forget
you know what? They deliver. They deliver.
They won't deliver that far to me. I live right too far away. Forget about it. Forget about it. Do you know any good place to get a burger? How about a hot dog? Gray's Papayas, right on, right? Isn't there a Gray's Papaya
Gray's,
out there?
Gray's Papaya is a hot dog. Yeah, you can get hot dogs with Gray's Papaya, but, you know, honestly, can you get that? Can you go that far?
Yeah.
It sounds like you're in like a, you know, maybe like a, the most you can do is Fairway.
That's right. Exactly. I can make it to the Fairway, and that's it. My favorite
right.
Indian restaurant. It's a. It's not a fancy one. It is called Curry Leaf on 26th in Lex.
Yes, that's a good one. But how can you? But you even have you been there? Ever?
Not
like,
in years.
You?
Not
yeah.
in years.
Yeah.
Like literally, from my wife's last birthday, I think it was. I went there. I took a cab down there, got the food, and brought it back up.
Right.
And sure,
how many children?
One, but it's but believe me,
you're
she's
only
a
one child.
She's a, it's a she's a problem.
She's oh.
not an easy child. She's difficult.
All
right. So what's the
wow,
other movie?
Right.
What's the other movie that? That
so I got a couple other movies. So there's a wonderful movie called Never Let Me Go.
Never Let Me Down.
Which Never Let Me Go.
Never Let Me Go.
Which I saw on the airplane recently. I saw it on the airplane recently. And I was bawling my eyes out, and it was really embarrassing.
You know what, dude? That's the altitude, because I cannot.
It might be.
I cannot watch a movie on an airplane without crying. Like I swear to God, what was that
yeah,
one?
I watched Anchorman on there.
Cried.
I cried. Bawling my eyes out, but that was you know.
What was that movie
and
with Ben Affleck, and where they went into the asteroid? Was that Armageddon? Ah, I cried during
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you were.
I cried
you were
during,
crying
that.
During that. You cried.
Cried.
During Armageddon. Well, that's a sad movie because, you know, there's something very sort of that affects something inside of us about the end of the world and stuff. So I can understand that in some ways.
It could have been I was crying about my life and somehow.
And you're
it was
right.
It was all metaphorical.
Represented Armageddon?
Yeah, it was all
yeah,
metaphorical.
I understand.
Never Let Me Go.
That's my other one. And then I've just been watching this documentary on, and this is easy because it's on YouTube. And there's a, and this is like told me if you want to, just as a bonus, there's a documentary about a Slovenian philosopher named Žižek, Slavoj Žižek.
Oh, yeah.
Know this guy?
Yeah.
He's unbelievable.
Slavoj Žižek.
Hang on 1 second. I have a guest showing up. Hold on.
He was...
Hi. He's like a Slovenian philosopher, and he...
He's been at the Occupy Wall Street, actually, I think.
He has, and he spoke at Google, and he's spoken at a bunch of different places, and he is the most fascinating person to watch. I don't agree with everything he says. He's kind of a, you know, he goes from, like, being a loon to, like, being incredibly, incredibly prolific, but he is the most interesting character. Like, he's mesmerizing to watch.
Huh.
He has all these tics, and he's like...
You're breaking up, buddy.
So he's a strange person who like has all these tics and stuff. So yeah. So that's my third, and that's on YouTube. You can just watch it on YouTube, the entire documentary.
Sweet. All right, well, we'll check that out. Do you have to go? Do you have company?
I have to go actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we got in touch late, but we'll do this again because this was fun. I enjoyed it.
All right, man.
I mean,
I'll
if you want
to
do it.
Soon.
I mean, I don't want
to. I'd love to. I always love talking to you, you know?
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Asif. And
I prefer it on the street, but this is good.
If I can convince my family, we'll go to Sapphire.
All right, great. You'll love it. You won't be sorry.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks, Asif.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's fun. He doesn't have the greatest phone system. It's like it was almost like Matthew and Asif traded phones.
I was going to tell Matthew what a great he must have bought a new phone.
Oh yeah, no, Matthew actually invested in a phone company. He was so excited, and then all I did I hung up on him as soon as Asif called.
What was the first movie Asif recommended? I couldn't because it was breaking up.
Oh, Today's Special. I'm a big fan of Indian food.
Should go to Brick Lane.
Where's that?
It's downtown, I believe, East 5th.
What did I just tell you? I can barely even make it into Midtown.
Just Brick Lane's really good, though.
Curry Leaf. Listen, I spent, I'd say about 15, give or take a couple years, 10 years, of my life in New York in like within the same three blocks, three different apartments. And it was all right in there, like Little India, 25th, 26th, 27th on Lex. There's like, I was on a block where there was literally 8 to 12 Indian restaurants. And those are the best Indian restaurants in the city.
Listen, I understand the whole movie thing, but why can't you bring Myla to an Indian food restaurant?
Okay, because look, she gets out of school at like 5, right? Because she does an after-school program, because it's cheaper than getting a babysitter. Five. So I come home from work 5:30 sometimes. I pick her up. Maybe Nikki picks her up. We get her at 5:30. We take the subway back down to, let's say, Curry Leaf, right? It's impossible to get there from the subway, so we got to take a subway down there. Myla doesn't take cabs. She refuses to. Makes her sick. And, you know, so then, you know, you're going to argue? You're going to save me, whatever, 15, 20 bucks right there? Okay, fine. Let's go on the subway. We walk there. By the time we're there, it's 6:30. Okay? Then we eat. By the time we get our first food, she's already melting down because she's got to go to sleep in 20 minutes. So if I get her home by 8:30.
That's your fault for instilling such an early bedtime.
Dude, kids that age need to sleep for like 12 hours.
I didn't.
What do you mean you didn't?
I never slept when I was a kid.
Well, look at you now. Look at you now.
I still don't sleep.
Right. There you go. That's why. It's going to catch up with you at one point. You're going to be very tired. All right. We're going to go into the, another long freebie.
Still got songs.
Oh, right. I guess this is going to be Freebie Friday because I got an update on the Bradley Manning trial or hearing, I should say. It's like a pretrial hearing. And I don't know what the – let me just check and see what the latest is. But – Bradley Manning's attorney. We haven't heard the disposition of this, but Bradley Manning's attorney, Coombs, David Coombs, started the hearing essentially, and this is a pretrial hearing. Started the hearing by basically saying that this is a the presiding judge, known as the investigating officer, in an Article 32 hearing is what I guess Article 32 probably of the military code of justice. Coombs, his lawyer, basically said, you need to recuse yourself to the to essentially the judge, because the judge is
Lieutenant Colonel Paul Almanza.
Almanza has worked since 2002 as a prosecutor for the U.S. Department of Defense. He's prosecuted 20 cases. And he's been at, I'm sorry, the Department of Justice since 2002. The DOJ has an ongoing case that is trying to build against WikiLeaks. And it would be in the interest of the Department of Justice to get Bradley Manning to testify against WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. And so it's very difficult to have somebody who's working for an entity that is trying to prosecute WikiLeaks adjudicating over someone they want to be a witness in that case, which is a separate case. Second, Coombs, the attorney, makes the argument that he had a list of 48 defense witnesses presented to the judge. The judge only is allowing two of those defense witnesses to testify, as opposed to the prosecutors who called for a 20-person witness list and all of whom were allowed to testify. Third, Coombs asked that the entire hearing itself, the pretrial hearing, be held in private, so as not in any way to be prejudicial to a potential jury pool. In this case, I guess the jury pool would be, I guess, military personnel and a court-martial. Fourth, he said he was protesting the nature of the fact that he was not allowed to even name any potential witnesses who would challenge, A, the nature of the material that was leaked to WikiLeaks and the harm that it supposedly caused. Right? So, in other words, you know, it's been a year and a half. This material is basically, as far as I know, the vast majority, if not all of it, has been completely now released by WikiLeaks. And excuse me. All of it has not been released by WikiLeaks. Much of it was released by the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Guardian and other newspapers around the world. WikiLeaks, I think, released the bulk of it, but certainly not all of it. And certainly not the majority of it, and certainly not even the potentially the most pertinent in terms of what theoretical harm it's done to the United States. And that's very, very important distinction, because one of the 23 counts against Bradley Manning that have now finally been released for the first time is that he knowingly, quote, gave, quote, intelligence to the enemy through indirect means. Now, this is an extra, I mean, think about this for a minute. He knowingly gave intelligence to the enemy through indirect means. WikiLeaks operated no differently in this case than the New York Times has in various other instances. That many newspapers have in other instances, functioning exactly in the same way. And what intelligence went to the enemy? Are all of the thousands of cables, is that intelligence that went to the enemy? All of it? I mean, what is the standard here? That is a very, very vague standard. So as of this broadcast, we don't know what the disposition, whether the judge essentially or the investigating officer held a recess, I guess, to determine what he should do next when faced with a motion that he should recuse himself. And he has, I think, returned to the court as of a little bit while ago, but it's unclear as to what the judge how he responded. I mean, I would imagine if he was going to recuse himself at that moment, the hearing probably would be over. I don't know.
The military court does not allow like live coverage. Like the journalists who are in there have to write down all their information, and then they can't report it until the court goes into recess.
Ah, okay. So
that's why you don't see this information coming out.
I see. So we just knew what I just told you just because the court took a recess so that the judge ostensibly could decide whether or not he was going to recuse himself. So we shall see. In the meantime, let us now go to our songs of the week, ladies and gentlemen. And let me take this opportunity to remind you that the Majority Report, whether you get the 40-minute free version or the hour-and-a-half not free version, can only exist because of member support. So even if you're saying to yourself, like, I don't need an hour and a half. My commute is only 40 minutes a day. I don't need an hour and a half podcast. And even if there were those days where I wanted 50 minutes instead of 40, or I wanted an hour, or I wanted over the weekend, or whatever it was, or maybe there was a story I wanted to get to that I didn't hear coverage of, or maybe I love hearing Sam go after a libertarian callers. We get those from time to time. We had one the other day that was just bat crap crazy. You know, you could just say, I like this first 40 minutes. And even though I'm not forced to pay for it, if I want it to continue indefinitely, or I want to show my appreciation for it and actually use my dollars to support something that I like as opposed to something evil. And I know that you can all look at your bills and say, hey, that $10 that I spend there, that goes to something evil. Quit smoking cigarettes and spend it on our podcast. Smoke less and spend it on our podcast. Or, you know, to hell with Time Warner. Or that magazine. Do you really need that magazine? I don't think so. But your support makes this show possible. And so please, if you could become a member, do. With that said, ladies and gentlemen, today we have, should we do, which one should we do first?
Let's go with Reefer Cake.
All right. This is My Own Drone by Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Are you ready to rock?
We're living out in the countryside. I thought I was all alone until I saw myself that first government drone. Please don't shoot me, I'm doing nothing wrong. Just listening to some Jimmy Reefer Cake songs. You know me, I'm a big music lover. Wondering if my favorite bands might do a cover, like Eddie Vedder singing We Are the Majority. That would give the song a whole new authority. Snoop Dogg jamming out Job Phil. Willie Nelson singing Smoke a Bowl would kill. Why does this drone just keep hovering? I guess it's my music that he's been discovering. On one hand, I'm scared of that menacing eye. On the other, it's pretty freaking cool I look and fly. I wish I could have my own government drone. With my own drone, I could fly it to the Super Bowl and watch every play real close. I could spy on radio executives, blackmail them to play my songs. I wish I could have my own government drone.
I like it. I like it. Coming on the heels of reports of government drones being used. I guess they were being used. The story was about supposedly some cattle rustlers, but I guess they were also members of some sort of rogue members of the Promise Keepers. And it was a great way, I think an IMer in the better half of the program made the point this week. Great way to test this stuff out. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's sort of like a modern day Waco type of thing. Obviously not with the same disastrous implications. But, you know, these marginal right wing militia figure types. Test the drone out. It's really just a matter of time before they're using these for protests or for, you know, trying to find pot upstate. They, you know, they have helicopters go over apparently looking for pot. They'll just use drones. But when I get my own pulsimeter or whatever that thing is, electropulse thing, I'll just shoot those babies out of the sky. So. We'll see about that. Of course, I'm joking. I just want to say that to the NSA. I would never do that. I was just simply making a joke, all in jest. But sometimes many a truth in jest, but not so much that one could get sued for it. Do we? We don't have that in our rotation, do we? That was my favorite opening of the Majority Report. You don't even know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're
talking about. We're going to dig that out. We're going to have some new openings. We're going to get some
more. I might have been 5 years old when that one was.
You know what? That's probably likely. You know, when I was protesting the first Iraq war, I think you were five. I honestly do. Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ. From David Benjoya of the Screaming Majority. And, of course, that's Daniel and Paula and David. Here's one Romney wrote for us, channeled by Dan. He does that, what is it, a lot? It didn't come out. He does that a lot. Cheers, Dave. Here it is, 10 large.
If my religion let me gamble, I'd surely place a wager that you'd rather vote for a guy who worked to send your jobs to Asia. If I could take down Newt, I finally get a better percentage. But then Rick Perry goes and actually strings together a sentence. He said I liked the mandate, thought it'd be great for all the states. Then I said the thing I think won the debate. Do you wanna make a bet? Do you wanna make a bet? You got $10,000 or whatever's in your wallet. Whatever I said, you know I never said it. I've got 10 G's, says I fixed it in the edit. I wrote a little book that made everybody drowsy. Touting up my plan, but then I said that it was lousy. I fixed a few lines, but I always said that state by state bit. As sure as I'm rich, I was consistently a hypocrite. I said my little plan could be an inspiration for the state, a model of success that no one else should emulate. Do you want to make a bet? Do you want to make a bet? You got $10,000 off whatever's in your wallet. Whatever I said, you know I never said it. I got 10 G's, says I fixed it in the edit. Come on, I'll give you credit. Do you want to make a bet? Do you want to make a bet?
Can I just say something about the genius that is the Screaming Majority? I said it was a model of success that no one should emulate. Is there any? But those lyrics capture Romney's argument on Medicare. I mean, honestly, if Barack Obama got up in a debate and said, you have said this is a model of success that no one should emulate, that is, I mean, come on, seriously, that is an amazing, that's an amazing sentence. That's an amazing sentence. That's the type of thing, if I could generate my commentary in that fashion, I would imagine we would have 7 to 10% more members than we do now. But now, with that said, let's head into the better half of the program. I don't know. Is this a freebie Friday?
Yeah, do you want to even waste the time? We could just, we're in the better half right now.
Oh, yeah. We only have 9 minutes left anyways. Holy cow.
Why waste the time on a song? We just got so much to get to.
It's true. Let's see. I did the NDA, the Wyden Ryan thing, the budget. Should I go over? I mean, I think we're quite clear on what we now have this codified. But I would, again, you know, and it hadn't occurred to me until I was talking to Cliff, I would go back. If you want to know how this tracks exactly, do you remember that interview with Charlie Savage where he was talking about the difference between the Bush and the Obama administration in terms of civil liberties? At the end of the day, it may not make that much of a difference, but it really is a difference in terms of, he said that people perceived Obama as a guy who would protect civil liberties when, in fact, what he was protecting was the rule of law. And that is why it was so important for the Obama administration. Then why, if I had been thinking about what Charlie Savage had said to me in that interview, you would see that President Obama does not care about civil liberties. He cares about the rule of law. So codifying the capacity for the president and the military to indefinitely detain someone was paramount. Codifying it in law as opposed to an interpretation by the executive branch. This is very, very important distinction to understand. At the end of the day, that's not much solace as they're dragging you away. That could have been a screaming majority line. Right? At the end of the day, that distinction's not much solace as they're dragging you away. But for those of us who like to bury their emotional response to things in some measure of over-intellectualizing, that's helpful. That's a helpful distinction. Let's go to the IMs, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, you know what I'm doing this afternoon? Because it's Name Drop Friday.
What are you doing this afternoon?
I'm going to rehearsal.
Ah.
For a play reading I'm doing. And I think Brooke Shields is going to be in the play read. She comes a little bit later in the rehearsal process. We're just doing a reading. But it, I guess ostensibly for investors. One never knows. But it's fun. It's a fun experience for me because
that's
it's
very cool
to do stuff that's fictional, you know, to think about like sort of it's I find it enjoyable. It's a nice change of pace. Let's see. Bush and Cheney's back in 1991. Six of the 10 largest banks in the world were Japanese. Now, not one of the six is to be found anywhere. Well, I guess, is that supposed to be encouraging in terms of the way we're going to get rid of our too-big-to-fail banks? SE charges former Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac executives with securities fraud. Treasury is shorting dollars. Shouldn't you? Irony to find ECB solution to Eurozone credit pull and MF Global. Approximately 57% of children living in the U.S. homes are either considered to be low income or impoverished. The 50 economic numbers from 2011, almost too crazy to believe. Oh, wait a second. Deep. All right, let's go to 727. Sam, next time Cliff comes on, could you ask him about his radio station? If I remember correctly, he was going to broadcast in D.C. GOP radio. Just started broadcasting here on FM. Not that I will abandon the majority report, of course. Thank you. We may even be on it. I will ask him about it, though. for your end of the year best of one fake Rosen v. Rosen and the Chancellor Fox News story. Tom Hartman, Left Coast Marcus, talks about Strauss and Howe's The Fourth Turning. The first generation lives through the catastrophe. The second generation lives with those people and understands what it is. The third generation knows the first and has a basic understanding. The fourth generation has no contact or perspective and repeats the same mistakes that got the first generation into the same shit in the first place. And so the cycle continues. I guess I'm going to have to read that. Oof. Yes, it's very interesting. My response to this was a little bit more emotional than I thought it would be. Christopher Hitchens died today, maybe last night, from yesterday, I guess it was, cancer. At age 62, he was in a Texas hospital. I guess the cause of the death was pneumonia, but he had esophageal cancer. And, you know, I obviously disagreed vehemently with him on the Iraq War. And there were times I thought he was a real sort of douchebag during that period. We'll get to the calls in just a moment, folks. Hang in there. And I thought that, you know, the booze had really sort of soaked his brain in such a way that he was slightly irrational. The guy was brilliant. To watch him debate was amazing, even if you completely disagreed with what he was saying. And much of the stuff he's written has also been equally brilliant. Some of it has been, you know, a little bit obnoxious. And my understanding, you know, I'm on a couple of these email lists, and people that had direct contact with him, men and surprisingly women, writers, all said that he was extremely supportive of young writers and whatnot. And he was also one of those guys who, Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote, something about his demise and said that, you know, the thing about him is he was full on completely convicted in terms of what he wrote about. And that, he had no regrets about smoking and drinking as much as he did, which certainly led, obviously, to his cancer, because it enhanced his writing, and that's what he was about. And, you know, he was always thoughtful, not one of these, like, smug douchebags who write the conventional wisdom, certainly not a writer of conventional wisdom. So sad to see a guy like that go. Let's go to the phones. You're calling from 206. Who's this? Who's this? You're calling from 206.
Hello.
Who's this?
Yes, sir. This is, this is Larry. I also go as the Missing Link.
Ah, the Missing Link. What's going on, Larry? How are you?
Hey, not too much. Just sort of hanging around today. My wife's got a Christmas party at work, so I thought I'd join her. And I took the day off. But I just saw a scroll at the bottom of MSNBC that said that Fukushima, the radiation, is no longer present. But in case people want to know, that radiation, you know, once it gets on stuff, it hangs around for quite a while. And because of the work I do, I come in contact with material that comes in from other countries. And yesterday I was hauling a container from to the rail, and the containers all have to go through a radiation detector run by the Customs and Border Patrol. And I was hauling one through, and a red light lit, so I took it over to the customs office, and they go through some rigmarole of testing it, and the guy came out and said, this container is radiated from Fukushima radiation.
Wow.
So, although they're, you know, examining the contents because they want to make sure that no radioactive material comes in that shouldn't, this particular container was hiding the contents by its own radiation, which was significant enough to set off the detector. So Fukushima is finding its way onto American soil one way or another.
Wow, that's unbelievable. And so did they ultimately test the contents of the container and find them radiated as well?
Well, the contents, I don't know what happened as far as the contents go, other than the fact that they did allow the container to be put on a rail. So it's heading across the United States right now as we speak.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So we can all share in that. Well, I will keep that in mind. And next time I see a container train go by, I might want to step back a couple of feet.
And let me toot Jimmy Reefer Cates' horn just a moment and say thanks a lot for letting me know about those government drones hovering over me as I'm talking to you now, probably recording all the words that I'm saying.
I don't doubt it. Well, Larry, thanks. I appreciate you calling in, buddy. Have a good day.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye. Bye-bye. Wow. That's what a heartwarming, heart-glowing story in many ways. Kyle, Hitchens died on the last official day of the Iraq War. Weird indeed. Also, I don't like the shit between Matt and Matthew. The movie reviewer should hate Matt. That's how it's supposed to be. Goddamn, I love when other people literally walk into a live radio show. The UPS guy, Asif's guest, more of this. Yeah, it is actually pretty fun. Kevin Semicolo, this love fest is too much. Please bring back the tension. Rose in 2012. Jay Sheridan, be warned, Four Lions requires subtitles. Never Let Me Go is basically depression in movie form. Fair enough. Cool J146. Riot Shields, live leak view. What is this? What are you sending me? I've seen the Riot Shields link. Oh, an LRAD on a helicopter. Wonderful. Thank you. I'm happy now. Sam, I just signed up to sponsor Ring of Fire on January 28th. I had to send an email with copy as it did not let me type my message in. I hope you get to read it. What do you think about Rocky Anderson running the Justice Party? I'm going to try and get Rocky Anderson on. I put a request in for that. I'd love to talk to him about it. I also want to have Buddy Romer on. You know, I'm going to have him on. I'll talk to him about it. I don't know enough about it, but I know Rocky Anderson. I remember him from when he was the Salt Lake City mayor, and I have respect for the guy, so. I'll listen more to what he says. Neffer, film recommendation, Tree of Life, Brad Pitt, Sean Penn, available on Netflix. Beautifully shot throughout, thoughtful piece. Yeah, you know, I've watched it, part of it. I'm going to watch it again. Nikki really liked it, and I'm a huge fan of Terrence Malick. So, Jim Dollemeyer, first chat attempt ever. Did it work? Can't wait for today's special. What's today's special? The movie. Oh, okay. It did work, Jim. Curry Hill. Oh, right. That's what that area is called. Lawyer Matthew. By the way, pretty funny to hear your parenting complaints. Matthew knows my parents. Oh, yeah, you got to keep that under your hat, buddy. I've known Matthew since we were Matthew Lawyer, not Matthew Film Guy. Matthew Lawyer and I took baths together. I think I told you that, right?
There's a lot of Matthews in your life.
There's a lot of Matthews in my life. A lot of Matthews. Matthew Lawyer and I, we took baths together. Naked baths.
This was only what?
That
last
was,
month?
No, that was that was, of course, in our college days.
What?
We were trying to, when we were, what? We were trying to save money. No, we didn't go to the same college.
But you did take the baths in your
We took the
days.
Baths, but we were, I think, probably three or four or something like that. Matthew says it seems like yesterday. Oops, it was. a tape. Sammy, I bet you will never do this, but the real place you go for Indian food is that strip in Jersey City, which is a few blocks from the Journal Square PATH station. You are correct, sir. I will never do that. The place you need to attend before you die, as opposed to any to either during or after, is called Rasoi. Trust Raso. I've taken Brits there, and they know this stuff. Rasoi. Walk in, roll out. I haven't lived there since 01, but I'll never forget this place. You know, maybe that's the type of place, like, you know, if I ever find myself going to Newark, going to the airport. In Jersey City. Kevin 11, sorry, that's ridiculous. The odds of dying in a terrorist attack are minuscule. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control, the odds are 1 in 88,000. The odds of dying from falling off a ladder are 1 in 10,000. Even in 2001, automobile crashes caused 15 times more Americans' death than terrorism. Above was a quote from The Link, a fascinating article. I will check it out. Okajik. I don't really like sapphire. It's expensive and not that great. All right, well, if it's expensive, forget it. Although I must confess I haven't been eaten there yet. Baluchi's is good and cheaper. Yeah, it's like a chain, though. It's on West 56, too far. If you want a place for a really special occasion, last night I went to wife's holiday dinner at Tribeca at Tamarind. I've been to Tamarind on 21st Street for, somebody's birthday years ago, back when I was a little more flush. I've had my day being wealthy in this city. Maybe it'll return again. Maybe it won't. Spay F. Wyden is trying to defend his new plan by saying it gives us a public option, just like what progressives were pushing for in the original health care bill. What? That is thoroughly, it gives us a public option by taking away, we already have for Medicare a public option. It's the only option. That's ridiculous. He's scrambling now. We were willing to use the public option as a compromise to single payer. By putting an option to Medicare, he's taking a step backward away from the single payer system, which weakens the whole system. You're absolutely right, Spaff. You're absolutely right. I hope people out there skewer him for this. He deserves it. Have you interviewed the big kahuna libertarian himself, Ron Paul? He would be a much more interesting foil for you than some of these little libernats that try and debate you. Oh, and I finally cut loose my Young Turks membership. Jenk's been making noise about going libertarian, and besides, he doesn't need my $10 a month. But since you do and have kept your intellectual integrity for all these years, I'll be upgrading to Cedarista next payday. Thanks for keeping it real, Six. Chin people, 666. Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. You get one of these. You know what I will do is I'm going to I will have Tim Carney on. I'm going to try and get him on next week. You know, I'm still in high-level negotiations to get Rattigan on. Tim Carney will be interesting because Tim does have a certain reasonableness and appreciates that his libertarianism can only take him so far. But then he also does have a streak of, like, wanting to sort of just, like, pick fights with liberals for things that are not necessarily liberal. Janet, since it's Name Drop Friday, how did your reading go this week? Well, I've been rehearsing this week. I've been rehearsing. So I'll let you know. But one of the guys, Larry Pine, who's like a character actor, he's actually quite fun to work with. 150, 6, 8. Sam, it's Triangle Bill. It's Cliff's dad, Danny Schechter, the news dissector. I've always wondered if they're related. I don't think so. I think they spell their name wrong, but I'll check. Hitchens died of cancer, always tragic. By the way, esophageal is pronounced esophageal. Oh, G-L. Esophageal. Oh, okay. Thank you. Sam, Funky Movie Friday, Dr. Broner's Magic Soapbox. lot of movie reviews. Dr. Bronner Magic Soapbox. Macintosh, Dave Siren on meeting Hitchens. Thanks. What's it entitled? On Being Spit Upon, Literally by Christopher Hitchens. Don Alaska, as an independent filmmaker, have you seen Primer? It was made with an estimated $7,000 budget. I agree with you, Hitchens. His Trial of Henry Kissinger book was great. Primer, I've heard of that. Primer. Wait. I didn't hear you report on the BP Gulf oil spill settlement. $250 million settlement for a $50 billion crime. You know what? I just didn't catch it. Primer was a great little film. I will talk about that BP oil settlement on Monday. Jason Parton, I've got an idea about this whole Rosen thing. Just call him randomly and ask him a question about anything. From there, just let it snowball. Have you read any Tony Jute? Of course. Tony Jute actually was one, was a fairly, I think we had him on like three or four times on the original Majority Report. Used to tease Janine about it because it's like, I can't remember if they had some back and forth. It was pretty funny. Reading his essays on, I think he had, was it MS? Or maybe he had Lou Gehrig's, I can't remember. But reading his essays on it, unbelievable. His book, Ill Fares the Land, brilliantly sums up what's wrong with the world nowadays. Quote, something is profoundly wrong with the way we live today. For 30 years, we have made a virtue out of the pursuit of material self-interest. Indeed, this very pursuit now constitutes whatever remains our sense of collective purpose. We know what things cost, but have no idea what they are worth. Yeah, well said. Red State. Oh, yeah, that Kevin Smith movie.
That was a good movie.
I just added to my instant queue. Just did it. Just. They're giving me a link. I did it immediately. It's interesting. John Miles, definitely tried Brick Lane Curry House for a little more of a British take on Indian food.
That is what I recommended.
I feel the same way about Hitchens. Even when I disagree with him, he was at least witty and intellectual. Too bad more the Republicans can't be more like him instead of pandering idiots and douchebags. The Voltaire quote about God making all my enemies stupids come to mind. PF 1800, Primer is interesting. The most scientifically valid treatment of time travel in a movie. Confusing, though. All right, folks. The final I am of the day. Will it be Matthew Lawyer or Cool J 140? Let's go with Cool J 146 because I can talk to Matthew Lawyer at any time. Did some research. I calculated that a lot more people have died as pedestrians getting hit by cars than have by terrorism in the past 10 years in New York City. Did some research. Where are the billion-dollar grants to militarize crossing guards and improve pedestrian safety? You know, the one argument that people would give that in response is Dick Cheney's famous 1% doctrine. Even if there is a tiny, tiny, tiny chance that a terrorist could get a nuclear device and blow it up in a city, kill hundreds of thousands, we must... And then I added this part, strip all Americans of all their rights and continue our wars in pursuit of our imperialist economic doctrine. Folks, have a wonderful weekend. Have a wonderful weekend. I will see you on Monday. Tomorrow I will be morning. I'll be on Ocuthon. I think you can get there by going to Occuthon.com, I think it is.
Yeah, that's it.
I'll be on at about, I think, 8:30 in the morning. I'm taping it up with Chris, but it's actually for next week. And that's it. See you on Monday.
Shifted in and out of